general office and sustainability. I indeed confirm that we have received the invite. The letter was addressed to the public protector. The public protector would have been here at the time of receipt of the confirmation of the dates and the venue. The public protector had already left for a training course, a 2-week training course in London, and I'm here in her stead. Your letter requires the accounting officer of the public protector to appear before the standing committee on public accounts with regard to the contents of the annual report in 2008 and 2009. And your letter indicated that you will consider the report specifically the financial statements and report of the Auditor General. The accounting officer of the public protector is the chief executive officer. I have brought him along as you have requested, together with the chairperson of the audit committee, Mr. Busi Mokwena.
Can we allow your delegation to introduce yourself, and then we'll come back to the substance of
the question. Yeah. I will just introduce Mr. Temba Motesa, who is the accounting officer in the Office of the Public Protector. He's here with his delegation. I will leave it in his hands to introduce his delegation. And I'm handing over to him, Honorable Chairperson.
Good morning. My name is Kalalelo Masibi. I'm the Senior Communications Manager in the Office of the Public Protector.
Good morning all. My name is Ernest Krause. I'm from the Public Finance Division in National Treasury.
Thank you. Can we have comrades
Roy Ainsley, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Mark Steele, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Pete Pretorius, member of SCOPA.
Morning, Faith Mutanzi, member of SCOPA.
Good morning,
my name is
Mike Patrick,
COPA member.
Good morning, I'm Ishmael Malala, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. Comrade Temo Gundi, I am chair of COPA. Right. Remember, we're given an 8-week have been given permission from the House Chairperson's office to organize that meeting. It was very true, from 8, not 9, from 8 to 10.
And last night I got the permission of the DA that for a meeting
to cooperate myself with their letters of apology. But I'm sure this will be complicated to ask for money, saying that today we will organize the talk. Secondly, it is around defense. Unfortunately, the chief is not here for this chief week, but our intention is to see if we cannot push to have it before we go on to the, so that we have closed everything for this part of the year. And also that, as was indicated, I'm sure we should be able to get confirmation so that by the time we come back in July, we would have confirmed our oversight trip. We have provisionally the 22nd of July. It is committee's week, and it is a cultural service week, home affairs, justice. So I'm sure that will be tied down. Just wanted to pass this for you. Now, the public protector, I just want to emphasize the fact that we have called your office, as you read out in the letter, to engage on those issues, but the committee we need to get some clarity around for purposes of fulfilling our responsibilities to Parliament. We view the Public Protector's Office as a very important institution, established not by an Act of Parliament, but by the Constitution itself, an institution that is there to support our democracy. Now, for it to give that support, it must be in a very, very healthy state. Otherwise, if it has issues as well, I think it is diminishing, extending, and disability to report effectively. You recall that we, in the past, had the Commission for Gender Equality about the state of affairs was seriously concerned. And we have had that engagement with them. So it is in that context. And I must say that this encounter is nothing more than just a very simple exchange of information to understand what happened, why this happened, and what it is that has been done to deal with this issue. And we have every intention this being a Friday to have an early day before going to be here any longer. I can assure you from your side, not from our side. So help us to have an editing by giving us short, precise, and objective responses. The temptation I know is always there to try and remove issues around. That's not helpful. It only prolongs our stay here. Let's just deal pointedly with the issue so that we can say collectively how do we correct the witnesses that are there for the challenges that are there. I think that is the premise from which all the companies are coming from. So by way of starting, I will hand over to Pretorius to get up going. Pretorius?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Welcome to the Public Protector, also from my side. My focus area will be the some cases without a single matter of emphasis. Although we have a qualification for the year being reported on, it relates to a narrative and valuation of our assets. On the whole, our financial and procurement systems are, according to the audit report, flawless. So that's the exception as mentioned by the previous incumbent of the position. As I said, the finding relates to the valuation of property, plant and equipment. You might just refer you to what you're talking about in terms of the financial notes. Property, plant and equipment comprised of computer equipment, furniture,
At
the bottom, it's just a short definition of what the
take up along with you.
Okay.
139
at the bottom. I just wanted to say, read you what we are talking about, what property, plant and equipment comprise. It says at the bottom, property, plant and equipment comprise computer equipment, furniture and fittings, office equipment, and motor vehicle. Page over to page 130. Under depreciation, just the last sentence there. The assets, residual values, useful lives, and methods of depreciation are reviewed and adjusted appropriately at the financial year end. That is the position which should happen at the end of the financial year. The value should be attached to the properties and assets. Now, the AD fines on page 110. Page 110 is the finding of the Auditor General. That is the reason why he counts this as qualified as finding. Paragraph 7, in terms of the South African statement of generally accepted accounting practice, property, plant and equipment, paragraph 51, requires that the useful life of assets shall be reviewed at each financial year end. The finding is management did not review the useful life of assets during the current or previous financial period. Paragraph 8, public protector's records did not permit the application of alternative audit procedures to determine the useful life of assets, as the conditions of the assets were not reflected on the assets register, and then the finalizes the finding by saying, therefore, I could not obtain all the information and explanations I considered necessary to satisfy myself as to the accuracy and valuation of property, plant, and equipment amounting to 10.3 million, as disclosed in Note 1 to the financial statement. If I may refer you to page 141, that is just a breakdown of the figures. The last figure under paragraph 11 is a figure of 10.392 million. I think that is the figure that the Auditor General refers to, which he was unable to verify in terms of the normal procedures. From that, there's certain questions which we would want to ask the Auditor and the Public Protector to respond to. The first question would be, why was it not done? What happened? What was the reason why the evaluation useful value was not returned at the end?
Thank you, Chair, Deputy Public Protector, and Honourable Member. I will try to just give a brief historical context to this without because we were suspended with full salary, and actually a person was appointed during the time when the matter was being resolved through legal process.
With due respect, can I just interrupt? Even if it was an acting CEO, certainly the function remained the same. The function didn't disappear with the person. So what happened to the who performed the function when there was no CEO?
That's how I was not very clear. The person who was appointed as an accounting officer. The functions were performed. The functions of an accounting officer.
Yes, what was that?
It was a steady problem.
Where is it?
He left the office
to resign. Right. Yeah. The accounting here is what happened in Shushma.
Yes.
Therefore, whether you were there in January or not, we still want accounting data. And the question that Fatora asked, why was valuation not done? With or without that history, I just want to put it. Why was it done?
Thank you, Chair. I was, in fact, trying to give just a brief historical perspective. The serious problem was that in September 2009, the chief financial officer died. He was involved in a car accident.
That should have been
2008. 2008, yes. That was about 3 months ago. When I got to the office, I was told that the asset register and all the information on the assets were in his laptop, which was never recovered, hence the problem. But without putting any excuse, Chair, we accepted what the AG has in fact raised, and we've gone a long way to correct what the AG has mentioned. We have...
You have gone a long way to address the issues raised. It happened because the CFO passed away and all the information was in the I want to check the total first.
But just two further questions about the minute. Maybe you should.
All right, I'll call it. Namangela and then Steve.
The chief executive officer who died. I understand that one died. It
the
CFO. Oh, the CFO. Who died? Was he not the one who was suspended? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to follow up with a question relating to the answer that we've just heard concerning the tragic death of the former the CFO.
The CFO,
yeah. Equally of concern to the organization, I would imagine, was the information on his laptop. Now, Chair, what worries me here is that it sounds as if this laptop was the only source of information. And I'd like to know a little bit more about the data protection policies of the Office of the Public Protector and such, that all of their data on all of their assets is stored on one laptop. That surely cannot be the case.
I was going to address that issue. Apparently, the CFO had a laptop and a desktop. And obviously, the desktop, the information on the desktop is one that goes into our backup system in our server. But when I came in trying to retrieve the information, because that information on the desktop and the information on the server was not related to the asset register that he had on his laptop. So you are scared, there was nothing.
But how do you know that the information on
the laptop? That's what we've been told by the person who was acting as the CFO at the time. But that is me, Chairperson. We went on, we did, when I came in, I did try to go through the verification of the assets, but over the period of time, the AG could not assess the basis upon which the verification and dissipation of the assets is and said that it was done to have accepted at that particular time, which we accepted, and then we went on to try and do it in the proper way.
All right. Just a minute. The CEO is saying to us that the former CFO, even the current CFO, is solely responsible for the asset decision, and he's got no people working under him or under her to assist, and he would be able to take over the process if something goes wrong.
Yes,
sir. I'm trying to get to the point of proper succession planning. Are you at the moment, have you changed things? Are there people now in place that can take over if the CFO disappears somewhere?
Yes. In fact, within a few months, we appointed the CFO. And other thing that we've noticed is that we didn't have a proper succession plan, because even the person that was appointed as the CFO is not the person that was acting. The person that was acting was somehow very junior to take the position. But we have corrected that right now. So the proper succession plan in respect of all the positions in the office of the public contact.
Okay.
Yeah.
Matladi,
and
then
Steve. Okay, I would like to find out about the present CFO. Oh. If it happens that I'm not saying he's going to die, he died. And his laptop is missing. Would we also need information on the address of the public protector? In other words, I'm saying to you, what have you done to address the manner in which you keep the information of your office?
Thank you, Member. Thank you, Chairperson. The police now is still, you cannot have a desktop and a laptop at the same time. You have a laptop. If you have a laptop, you don't have a desktop. All the information at the moment you plug in your laptop into our server, all the information of laptop gets automatically backed up in our server, and which our server also has a contingency plan in case the building goes down, that some of the information is kept even outside our offices. So we have those systems right in place now. Over and above that, we have a proper succession plan. The current CEO who's with us here has people below him that actually perform the function that he does and trains them as well as part of the succession plan.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to confirm then that at the time of the CFO's death, the backup server did not have asset register details on them. That's the nature of the problem. At that time, now you have systems in place, but then you didn't. Is that correct?
No, we did have the backup systems at that time. But the only thing we discovered was that the CFO had a desktop and a laptop. And that information that was on the laptop could not get automatically updated into our server system, except the information that was on the
laptop. Let's not talk about the late CFO, because it's not here. And the information that is alleged to have been in his laptop, we cannot verify. So, let's just say there was no information.
Yeah.
Rather, because if you had a backup system, and that backup system had nothing, then it means there was nothing. Unless if you are saying that the CFO himself did not implement the policies that we had laid out, that the information should not be put on the backup system. So if you found nothing in the backup system, we assume there was nothing.
Can we just get confirmation that since this happened, since this qualified report, that things have improved, that you are now happy that you have backup systems, backup staff members who will undertake these functions as a register function in the absence of the CFO? In other words, if the CFO goes, you could other staff can take over without giving information. Can you confirm that?
Yes, we can confirm that, yes.
Can I just, secondly, just refer for clarity purposes more than anything else to page 32 of the report. Trying to establish where asset registration falls in your system, in your program. Program 4 is corporate support services. Now, I presume one of the sub-programs on page 32. There are four sub-programs mentioned. The one is human resources, one is finance and supply chain management, the other one is administration, the other one is knowledge management. And I suspect that asset verification and registration falls under sub-program finance and supply chain management. Is that correct? You confirm that? Can I then refer you to page 37, which gives us more detail about the sub-program finance and supply chain management. If you look at the third one from the top, 8.4.4.3, the output for this, we're talking about the year 2008-2009, the output would be unqualified audit reports, and in the final column you say unqualified audit report obtained for 2007-8 financial year. This to me is a little bit unclear why you refer to the 2007-8 one, while the column is actually meant for 2008-9. In a sense it's misleading, unless you can convince me otherwise. Because you haven't achieved the key audit for that specific one in the 2008-2009 one, that's why you're here. Am I correct in saying that that last column is wrong and it's misleading?
Yes, yes. Except to say that 2008-2009,
2007-2008,
such a deep
and an unclassified audit. As for the previous 5 years, we accept that. Why is it detected here as having been achieved?
I think it's an error, because we did not achieve it.
Why do we have that error here? I mean, it's not like you are making a team or a top. But there's a statement. Why is it there?
Because if you look at the heading here, it talks about achievement of target for the year 2008.
All I'm asking is why is this incorrect statement in your annual report?
I just can't remember how it came in and to come back to it. But I thought that we did get there.
We expect you to remember why there should be a wrong statement. Because a person who is not a cat will not have the benefit of understanding that that is a mistake. Not in fact, not a mistake, that this is wrong. It should not be there. Our assumption is that you take responsibility for everything that is in this.
No, I do.
So if that discrepancy, you are the only people who should be able to explain it.
Without going through the recording process. It shouldn't be as clear that should show you your own mistakes. You see them, you are there as an SMT, a manager, in order to really complete these things, correct them before they go out to the public. Did you look through it?
Yes, I did look through and share with all my colleagues. Somehow, all of us.
Once they do so, it will be very hard to pass more of this.
not accept by the total amateur. They have reported by the parliament that have this kind of thing. It's not accepted by the total amateur. And it calls on the leadership of the institution to really
wants to conclude by just saying that the purpose of my questioning was simply to get to the point where you confirm that things have changed dramatically and that this appearance today here will be a once-off, that you won't be here in front of us next year, we hope. Just to say that the Auditor General confirms also for us that the root cause of your problem was the unforeseen death of the former CFO, and the recommendation is that you should have proper succession planning in your administration or staff establishment to avoid the similar situation occurring in the future, and you have confirmed that things have changed and that this is the last time that it will happen in this respect. Is that so?
Yes, that's correct. We have changed, we have put everything in plan as recommended by the AC, and in terms of the plans of 2007 to actually address it quite a bit faster.
This financial year, what we have done that we were not doing also was to get the public protector and deputy involved in this financial year. The deputy public protector has got a delegation to look into the audit report as well and to also put in a financial statement and also a quarterly report. And this year, I've also undertaken a project to go and do inspections personally with the help of other managers who know, look into the records of the institution, prior to having the audit committees come and scrutinize them. In that way, I was able to detect errors such as this one, where information is inaccurate, and also at the same time able to rectify while I'm there in provinces and also coach the people that are involved. So the other thing that we did as well was to make sure that the operational plan of the managers, especially the chief financial officer, contain the activities outlined and in detail on whether they are doing this schedule, identifying assets, depression, all those things that were not done, and those that we suspect that you might have a problem are all included, and they are managed quarterly by the deputy public protector from this financial year. So I hope that next time it will be me answering a lot of questions of why there is this and that. Thank you, sir.
Right.
I'm pretty sure this topic, but I have some general questions later on in the category.
No, that's fine. Without preempting what will come, I think that is the kind of thing that we want to hear. Leaders taking responsibility, not sitting in offices and washing their hands of their ultimate responsibilities. Because the fact that the CEO is the accounting officer does not take away from the fact that the public protector, the deputy public protector, are actually the overall head of that institution. And when children come to push, they are the ultimate people who are accountable for what is happening in that institution. So, but anyway, Robert Roy?
On the question that you're discussing now, your, the deputy protector's involvement in ensuring that the financial affairs are satisfactory? Is she getting sufficient information from the audit committee? For example, these monthly and quarterly reports that the internal audit function receives. Does she also have sight of those?
The arrangement that I get all the quarterly reports submitted to me directly. I get all the audit reports, and sometimes when there is an audit sitting, I do go and sit there so that I can hear from myself. And also I scrutinize. I sit with the AG when we discuss matters of concern. I sit there as well so that I can hear where the problems are and also give guidance. The financial statements are submitted on a monthly basis, and then we scrutinize. Where we do not understand, we call the accounting officer to explain to us. In that way, we are able to manage the controls. The other program is what I have spoken about, the inspections. We do inspect records now. I haven't done for a finance section yet this year, but it will be very helpful when I do that to find out whether what they say on the record is what we actually have in the office. Thank you.
Matali.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start my questions with the operating lease payment and to refer the committee to page 31 of the annual report. And under 13, as disclosed in note 27.3 to the financial statement, there is significant uncertainty regarding the payment of operating leases in respect of premises used by the OPP. The contracts are between the Department of Public Works and the lessor. The OPP has not paid the monthly rental charge, and I am unable to establish the contractual commitment of OPP in respect of these rental agreements. Now, my question is based on that statement from the Auditor General. How did it happen that the Office of the Public Protector entered into lease agreements with Public Works and they do not have copies of the contract? Thank you, the Chair, for that, Member. The Office of the Public Protector did not enter into lease contracts with the Department of Public Works. The Department of Public Works, as has been the case with other government departments, has been contracting with the lessor on behalf of us. And then it has been them that has been paying rent out and so forth. And in 2005, there was a directive that obviously we have to. As the government department have a relationship with the lessor. What we did, we have now gone through the recording of all the obligations where we, as a public protector, have to pay ourselves and where the Department of Public Works, in fact, carry on the responsibility on behalf of us. Out of the 18 offices, we got a letter from the Public Works that indicates that only five of those leases that we should be paying, and they've given us that figure of the amount that we have to pay for them in respect of the previous years that has been paid for us. But met with the AG as well to find out the assessed requirement of this, and they said the letter will be submitted. So we have collected this checklist, and we have managed to get a proper price where we have the leases of all the buildings, the 18 buildings that we have offices in, and we know exactly what is our commitment and what is the commitment of the Office of the Public Works. And we have noted that there will be no contingent in this aspect because the Public Works has told us the exact amount that we owe in them, which came to about 5 million or so. And now we're negotiating with the Public Works because if they could even write off that amount that we paid.
They have given us a list of people who owe
But they, we were more keen to ask them to refer the light to another thing. That kind of activity has to us. They have been doing this with us and with all other companies.
I want the OPP to be aware of one thing. We are not dealing with the future yet. What we are going to do, this will be correcting, now things will be running properly. We are dealing with the post-mortem. And when I ask the question, I say, how do you? I'm not saying, how will you do it? So you must tell me the reason why. Even if you didn't enter into any agreement, why didn't you get the copies of the contract? That's what I'm asking. And you can't come here and tell me we have ever since looked for them, now we have got the file. During the time when the Auditor General was doing his book, your book, this information was not there. That's why you have got a qualified report. So you must answer on that. Why wasn't it that then? And why didn't you get copies if you were not directly involved in having the agreement? That is my question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I can't say why. All along, the Department of Public Works has been like the landlord for us. So until such time that the AG raised the issue, they were actually paying for us, and that was actually the arrangement. Even the budget will go direct to the Department for the Leasing. It goes from Justice direct to Public Works. The only thing that you had to do was to say, look, these are the requirements, this is what the OPP requires for services, that's all. But yeah, what the idea is for that you need to know exactly how much was there.
So before the Auditor General came, as far as your consent, was just pre-lodging.
Before the Auditor General came, Chairman, we had our own list that we had entered ourselves as the Office of the Public Protector, and we had our own officers, for example, the former boss that was taking ourselves as the office.
In the Northwest,
I apologize. That was taken out of the open. So those were the ones that decided that our own
I hear that. I'm saying in relation to the other offices. So to say there are those that you entered into business yourself. And then I'm saying in those other offices where it was done through public work. In your own understanding, relationship, you had no obligation to public works in terms of those rentals. Because I think that is the cardinal point that the Auditor General plays, that you are not paying your master rental. So the Auditor General is therefore not in a position to have an idea of your contractual commitment. On those ones that you made then yourself, fine, you pay. But with regard to the other ones, if the Auditor General has not come, we just have continued as if nothing happened.
Chair, obviously, as I said, I can't say more than what I said. Just because Treasurer will definitely be arrested, Treasurer to the Department of Justice, Department of Justice to Public Works, and we are not coming. We're not the only one, but we're not the only department that has been affected by this, but we have taken the initiative. Among our staff, to ensure that this is correct. And even we went into public works ourselves to ask them the previous obligation as a first motive to find out what is best we can do to correct what has happened in the context.
I'm sure that was the explanation you gave the Auditor General.
Yes, it is.
Well, if it was sufficient, then this would not have appeared in the annual report. If you repeat it to us, that's the fault. I think the point that we are raising is that, like you are saying, after your interaction with the Auditor General and the concerns that were raised, you went out and corrected it. The point we are raising, and which is always of concern, is a department acting only after the Auditor General has come in. Because it's like if the Auditor General doesn't
that's the point to be underlined.
Thank you, Chairperson. When we turn 259 of the annual report under office rental, it reads the Department of Public Works has been
page 159, yes.
Under 27.3, office rental. The Department of Public Works has been paying the leases in respect of all office buildings occupied by the OPP. OPP has not reimbursed the Department of Public Works for this expenditure, and there is no clarity whether any other department reimbursed them. All agreements except the one for OPP at Mabopani are with the Department of Works. Department of Public Works has indicated that future invoices to the OPP will allow for these amounts. There is no clarity whether it includes any payment in respect of previous reports or periods, and there is therefore a possible contingent liability. Future negotiations will establish an obligation in respect of previous periods. An estimate of the possible contingent liability is for 2009, 13.2 million, for 2008, 7.1 million, and previous period's amount could not be estimated reliably. Now, my first question is, there seems to be a reluctance in the OPP paying public works. And you've just made a statement to say it's not only you that owes it. Now the question is, why don't you clarify this matter of the payment of the liability with the said department instead of telling us that it's uncertain if we should pay or not because it's not only us that owe them? I need clarity on this matter. Thank you, thank you, Chair. As I said earlier on, Chair, we have, in fact, if I may clarify, it's not that we don't want to pay our obligations as OPP. We pay our obligations, we pay all the invoices that are presented to us. But this was an extraordinary case where the budget was devolved from justice to public works in respect of those. But we went to justice, we went to public works, we brought them all together in a meeting to ascertain our liability to public works. And then they come back to us and say, the amount that we have a letter from them, the amount we owe us for all these previous years is just 5 million in respect of that, which we have. We already taken out and said that we need to procure it to them. Now we know exactly that this is the ability and not a contingency. Now, the only issue that we have now in the next meeting that we're going to have with public works is whether do they really insist in us paying this 5 million? We will pay if they insist that we pay. But the view that has adopted our negotiation is that they write it off.
On them, and it reflects in their book.
Then we will pay them.
That's why I said they have sent us a list of all the departments and entities that own them.
It's not a problem here, we will pay for them. It's just that we thought maybe we confess, but it could not be put, this thing could not be put at the door of the Office of the Public Protector. It is on the invoices from public works, if we could not
But after
but
our
wait,
engagement...
But wait. You were saying that payment was done by Justice. So why is they sending invoice to you because Justice has not paid? I think the question is, you were not sure, you did not know how much you might be owed. But you have an estimate. 2007-2008, your possible contingent liability was 7.1 million. And then for 2008-2009, you had made it 13.2 million. So the head question is, how did you come to this figure when you have don't have anything in front of you?
Finalization of the contract and what is meant by the depreciation of problem by the time next year, we almost have enough of print and our offices come to us.
Are they all being leased via Public Works?
No, we will do it ourselves now. Although we involve the public work in terms of getting the best market value, and seeing if we can't get any government building in the area, that's the public work is done. But we do it ourselves now.
Let's do page 31. Other statement of corresponding scissors. Item 14. As disclosed in note 1.21 to the financial statement, the corresponding figures for 31 March 2008 have been restated as a result of an error discovered during the year ended 31st March 2009 in the financial statement of the OPP S and for the year ended 31st March 2008. My question, what is the error that has been discovered in the year ending 2009? Could you really clarify this, outline it?
Okay, I'll ask the CFO to step on this, get a total reply on this one, actually.
Thank you. Thank you, CEO. I would like to refer you to note 1. It's disclosed in the annual report.
Okay.
Note 1 point. The errors are disclosed on page 135. Note 1.21. Those are the errors and it's explained.
Number 1 just explained. Talk to them first.
Thank you. The first table, it indicates the error in terms of accounts payable relating to medical aid, which is 702,000. And the second error is other operating expenses, which was the other leg is trade and other payables. It relates to the fixed assets.
Yes, but is there no explanation beyond that that can be made? If there is none, say there is none. If there is any, just give it. I mean, I read this yesterday and I was thinking, okay, pay accounts payable, medical
pay. Yes, in the calculation, it was discovered that in the calculations there was error when we interacted with the office of the Auditor General, and some of the errors we discovered them, then we went into it for the process of correcting those errors.
Okay.
As stated and lost it.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Medical aid payments are notoriously liable to fraud. Are you satisfied that this is just an error? Have you investigated the possibility that there was any kind of fraudulent behavior involved?
I like that, Chair. In this instance, it's whereby we try to pay the member's contribution to the medical aid as well. So that's why we can control, we know exactly how much we detach from the member.
So it was just a method of calculation.
Yeah, calculation. It may be such a calculation of a provision check. It was an instance where people, in fact, with the new GM coming in, people were moving from one medical aid to the other, which is a bit cheaper, and then we have made more provisions in that regard. So it has been more an error, the honorable member, related.
the members moving from one medical aid from ponytails to jams and so forth. Please have
connection.
Yeah, as you know, I'm quite keen on learning to understand how audit committees work and how the internal audit function works. And I don't want to jump to the last item, but on this issue, should this ever not have been picked up by the internal audit function and then acted on?
Some of the errors, I'm not sure which one, but some of the errors were in fact picked up by us internally and by the application. This one is
but this, in relation to this specific one, was it discovered internally or was the general that picked it up?
No, I think it's one that we picked it up ourselves, and that the general kind of self-care that is not the case. I think it's one that we picked up ourselves and we just look for the correct.
And if they picked it up themselves, how did it affect the financial statements of S228-209?
It may not have been affected, but it has to be disclosed.
Okay. How did it affect? Don't say me. Tell me if it did or not.
I would ask you to answer here because I may not understand the question.
The error was picked after the financials have been prepared. That's why it has to be disclosed.
And my follow-up question on that is now, could we still refer to the audit opinion of 2008 as unqualified, having realized that there was this error? Can we still vote to say you had an unqualified audit opinion for 2008 after you've realized that there was this error? And it passed. It's only realized in 2009.
Okay, I don't know what to say, but I can say that the error was corrected and there was no wasteful or whatever.
Well, we
corrected the error.
All right. I would have expected you to say it was an error, but would have had an impact on the audit opinion, or they were not substantive enough to have an impact on the audit outcome.
That's correct.
Okay. That's the essence of the question. But how serious are these statements? How serious are these mistakes that we can have? That's the essence of the question. How, in your own understanding of this error, are they substantive to the health of your financial statement?
This error, yes, it's a serious error with serious financial implications. However, because we are talking about this error, looking at this error itself, it's not material in relation to materiality sense of our financial.
That is what she was asking. Jefferson, thank you. I think that specific one in isolation would have come very close to materiality, but if you look at all of the ones that are disclosed in those notes, cumulative, if they were picked up and not corrected in the previous year, it would have actually led to a bona fide order.
Thank you, Chair. My last section is on.
So it says that question was not a frivolous question.
Mm-hmm.
That's
my last section, Chair, is on contingent liability. And for this one, I read 269 of the annual report. I can't read them all. It's under the European Union, in 27.1 to 27.2, occupational salary dispensation. I've already dealt with 27.3 of office rental, and then I'll also include questions on the legal and guidance. Let me start with this one on the EU. What is the possible cost that is incurred in the litigation? Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. This relates to CISEP, which was a collaboration of almost three Chapter 9 institutions, the Gender Commission, the Human Rights Commission, the Public Protector, relating to outreach. We had a fallout with one of the service providers, and the three of us were sued. So it's no longer a contingent now, because the three of Chapter 9 institutions reached a settlement agreement with the plaintiffs in this particular case, and the matter has since been settled. All three institutions and the plaintiffs signed the settlement agreement late last year, so the matter is now disposed of.
Can you explain this
litigation?
What is it all about?
And who is responsible for this veteran? Who is accountable to this veteran? And what has happened to that person?
Okay.
And tell us the amount that is involved.
Okay.
The amount involved was about just over R1 million, but we eventually settled at 600,000 in this particular case. Each Chapter 9 institution paid a portion of 200,000 to settle this particular case. The CISEP was a separate entity funded by the European Union, compromising all the Chapter 9 institutions. But in our
case, of all the Chapter 9,
all the three Chapter 9 institutions, Chapter 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you compromised. I was sure that a mistake was created.
No, it was in fact an entity comprising of all the three Chapter 9 institutions. On our side, the person that was representing the Office of the Public Protector in CISEP was the former acting CEO, which the Public Protector said earlier on. And in fact, we asked an explanation from her as to why we have to incur that 200,000 rand. And of course, he resigned before we could get any explanation in this particular case.
Now, if the person that resigned has left now the case, now that she's gone, okay.
And
when you resign, you set the notice. It doesn't mean you were not aware that she's going to go. So what did you do?
What we have done on our part, the matter is not over yet, because we still have some funds in the CISEP account, and we're trying to wind up the CISEP. We have a separate entity from us.
Chapter 9, under the EU, I feel that there are challenges. And my concern that I would like to raise in this meeting today is the fact that most of the time EU funds are not accounted for because they're not audited by the Auditor General.
I think part of your question was, actually, what happened?
Yeah, I said, what happened to the person? And she said she resigned, and I asked, what did they do?
I'm talking about the project. What happened in the project that left the three Chapter 9 institutions with the liability?
Chair, what we did on our side, we served a notice of the intention to take a disciplinary action against the person that was representing us on CISEP. And obviously, when the person leaves, it's hard for us to pursue for the disciplinary action. We cannot.
I think the other part of the question is what actually happened in that project. That
okay, what actually happened in this particular project, Chairperson, that a service provider was appointed for an outreach facility. I think it was in respect of the Eastern Cape.
contract was signed after the deadline that was signed, that was put by the EU as the deadline. EU indicated that for them to fund this particular project, we want the contract to be signed before, I think it was the 21st of December 2007, and the contract was only signed right now for January, and the EU could not fund the matter. So hence, that was just some mention on the part of the people at CISA. That's the case of the court.
Who was supposed to sign? Who was the actual person?
The actual person that was supposed to sign was the CEO of CISA. But now, the person that represented us in the board of CISA, we felt that he did not take sufficient action against the CEO of CISA to see to it that the interest.
Who was, do you purchase the memo, who was the CEO of CISA?
I can't remember the name of the lady. I remember her name was Miriam, but I can't remember her name.
Yeah, I'm sure there are lots of Miriam.
I can't remember her the name of her, but I can tell you quickly now.
It might be deemed a traffic later, but it goes a long way. When here is money that should be used to empower our people, and we lose it for no other reason than that there is a day set on this particular day. And somehow, a person does things on at their own time. I'm sure that for me, one of the lessons that you should pick out of this then is that if there are projects that you have to engage with other entities or which must be administered by outside bodies or even by yourself, you need to make sure you have people who are able-minded, who don't take national responsibilities lightly. So here we are, 200,000. Liability. Just because somebody has made a mistake and then went ahead to contract a service provider, and for that service provider to perform duties and expect payment. I'm struggling for words, but it's this kind of thing that reflects very badly. So much childish. There's no seriousness. They say here's the deadline, and you decide to create your own deadline. I mean, really. It's those kind of things. Those kind of things that, you know, we stand around, it doesn't matter, nobody will die, and all that. But anyway, no, wait a minute. Tell me?
Yeah. It's a follow-up to say, it's reported that as they were pursuing the matter with the former acting CEO, then he resigned. I just wanted to check if exactly when the former acting CEO was resigned. Then I have a follow-up question.
Okay, I think it was about January or February this year.
And then...
Wait a minute, when?
Come again, when?
And it should have been
in January or February, yeah, 2010.
I don't think your memory could be that big. You don't know whether it was in January or February.
Between January and February. January 2010.
Okay. And then when did the Office of the Public Protector become aware of this?
We became aware of this, I think it was one of the events of April last year, I think. I'm not sure of the exact date.
Who is sure?
because here what happened, we had to investigate and try to get more information on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not sure of when did you become aware of this irregularity?
Come
reason why I'm raising is the seriousness of the matter. That's why I'm making this
I can't do this. Let me see how can remember when did you receive the summons? Because there are two different versions of what was happening on the system, and two different versions of what was summoned in the public system.
Okay. And what is that the council officer not remember issues that he knew would be focusing on today here in this public hearing? Because it was the report of the auditor general. And this matter is listed as issues that have caused you to have a qualified audit opinion. But to come here and present and you keep on saying, I can't remember. Don't we have records? We don't have files that you could have brought along or maybe perused prior to coming here so that you give us the answers to the questions we're asking. But I do not remember the precise date. I can estimate the date unless I can go and be precise on the exact date of the summons.
Don?
Yes. And it's still a follow-up on the same matter, though you are not aware, but still, you allow there to resign. I put strong reservation on that one. How do you allow an employee to resign when already you know that there are serious pending issues against the employee? I mean, it was a month of suicide support. And then he could have had any reason to pursue the matter prior to accepting the resignation. And then he also raised the issue that you are pursuing other alternative measures. Can you share with us what are those measures? You want to understand that?
Thank you. The alternative measures ultimately are not a problem. They are about winding down the project. So they are not related to she has resigned. I think the question is, she resigned in January. You settled with the European Union somewhere in November.
October.
All right. So from October, you knew that you had a liability because of this person. October, November, December, January, especially. So.
Chairperson, to be honest, we had to take action as a public officer. I had to, in terms of the Public Protector Act, the issue of staff rests with the Public Protector. In as much as I wanted to take action and disciplinary action against this employee, I could not take disciplinary action without the blessing of the Public Protector. It was only when the Public Protector left that I could move in, the former Public Protector left, that I could move in and take action.
How
drive performance to protect the assets and the resources of the institution. How was that arranged in such a way that the previous public protector acted more like a CEO in terms of staff issues?
The truth is that if you may be aware, I think around my appointment in 2006, this matter created a conflict between the public protector and the deputy, and the matter was before the ad hoc committee. And one of the main issues was exactly the fact that there was no even room for the deputy public protector to operate. The public protector was in charge of all the staff and the finances as well, and there was direct link and communication between every staff member to the public protector. The CEO that was in charge until Mr. Mseto took over, until the CEO left, the acting CEO left in January this year, and she was in charge communicating, working directly with the public protector until this year. Until the new public protector to take office in October. And during that time, all these issues were brought to us when we sat with the new public protector. Then we realized what was taking place. That is why we had to even involve the deputy in looking into the finances as well. I don't know until when, but probably until the time when we are able to be comfortable that the administration can then be on their own. But the truth is that the chief executive officer was not the chief executive officer in the manner that is normal with other departments. Thank you.
If I may add on this one as well, I didn't even see the settlement agreement until after the public protector, the whole government left. I didn't even know the lawyers that were appointed to defend the company in this instance until such time that I received the deed.
But
this one,
it's not helping us in any way, because see, you are putting it to you, the PSMA is very clear on your roles and responsibilities as a CEO. Section 38 of the PFM is very clear. For you to just fold your arms as an accounting officer and say you didn't know what was happening, in essence, you were failing to exercise your duties as an accounting officer. So I wouldn't allow such an explanation as a president on behalf of the police. We couldn't accept that because you have got duties and responsibilities as prescribed by the Public Finance Management Act. Apart from that, and if you look at page 150, this is the same person we are talking about. 150? I believe this is the person we are talking about with Pocket and with the chief director. That's the person.
Who is that one?
The former acting CEO with the person. Just if you can look, she has been paid the acting allowance. The figure there. Also, she was given the merit bonus amounting to 28,000 something. And then who authorized the same past public protector? And you were watching as an accounting officer was the former public protector, whereas there were those all other issues surrounding this person.
Can you comment on that one? Yes, it was indeed the former public protector authorized this particular bonus. And also, if I may mention, I have in fact raised issues of the PSMA and there's been the special provision in the public protector which puts the power of the public protector precisely in my doing. So we really have a conflict. I didn't sit down there, chair, and put my hand when I know what are the provisions of the CA and what are my duties. I'm not sure if the members know when I acted in some of the instances, you know exactly what happened to me, and besides time that the former.
has been shared through you that the members of me should in fact appreciate this consensus and what has gone through and correct the consensus between the chairman and the public protector. I feel so bad. I do my work. I feel so bad when the members feel that I come here not done anything, not even looked at that when in fact I work so much.
I want us to move on, but let me, no, that's fine. Morgan, you still have your hand up?
The thing is that our, I took one, said the ex-public protector was doing everything, not even informing her. He was working alone. Now I'm asking myself a question. It means that his salaries were paid out by him. He did everything himself. And remember, he even suspended Mteto. Mteto was only reinstated when the new public protector came in. So, you know, I want to be on our side to say to him, yeah, why were you not doing this according to the PFMA? I know it's clear, but he couldn't do that because the ex-public protector was doing, he was doing everything. The only thing that he was not doing was clerical work. But this, all these other officers
doing that. Okay, all right. Okay. Malan,
for the presenter to take home on financial matters, even when Act is overwritten by PFMA, much longer. So when you come to us next time, don't say the public protection that you're threatening us. The only thing is institutional independence and investigating abuse of the power by the executive and so on. But on matters of finance, next time you come here, don't even mention the Public Protector Act. Just tell us, why are you demanding your finances? You see, lastly, if you mismanage your fund, National Treasury, in terms of the Constitution, can even stop money to you, regardless of the fact that you are that institution established in terms of that chapter. Please know that, take it home. So when you come here, know that you are here to account.
All right, Pretoria, I'll come back to you. You are still on the floor.
To follow on to the question of the currency owes suspension, I see he was suspended by the previous public protector on the 14th of October. A week later, he was again reinstated by the new public protector. But he was suspended by the previous public protector almost a week before his term finished. Was that an act of revenge from his side? What happened there? Were there any investigations into what he did wrong? And how come the new public protector could reinstate him within 4 days of taking office without investigating what went wrong previously? Just give us some clarity on that.
That's on the way.
I was suspended for the team of his departure. Obviously. I don't know, the matter was reported widely on the papers in respect of the payment. That you wanted to be done with, he eventually paid back the office.
Not it, that's the question of why were you suspended? We don't rely much on what you read in the paper, because they don't want to have our perspective distorted. Although we like the media to be here. Yes.
The only thing I can say is that in exercising my function, I refuse, on behalf of PFMA, I refuse to make payments in respect to certain money that we do in the public protector. For instance, it was the issue of the of his lease pay. In terms of the judge's act, in terms of the judge's rule, you're not allowed, because it's appointed as the judge of appeal. You cannot cash your leave day for the for it was for that you did not take for money, which
No, it's fine.
Okay. Has the OPP any grounds for thinking that they or some other agency should be conducting any kind of forensic inquiry into the financial decisions that were taken by the former public protector and the former acting CEO? Do you have any reason to think that you should, in terms of your PFMA responsibilities, be instituting any kind of forensic inquiry?
On my part, the matter that really, really got me worried the matter that is worrying me, Chair, was the CSAP matter. Obviously, as the first move, I would have asked the AG to look at it, but it was an independent entity that the AG could not look at it. But I've been told that the European Union, on its own, has instructed Pricewaterhouse to look into the CSAP. So I welcome that. So far, I can't say, look, I have reasons to ask for forensics. I feel that the AG has sufficiently done its work during that time. So that are better period to warrant such action.
Sorry, Chair, can I just follow that up? So, Pricewaterhouse, the PwC, have been appointed to conduct an investigation. When are they intending to report? Have you any idea? And to whom are they going to be reporting?
Yes, they're reporting direct chair to the European Union, to the ambassador of the European Union in South Africa.
I'm sure the public protector that you should have some interest on the outcome, because it might maybe even explain why the service provider was appointed beyond the due date, which ultimately led to your office having a liability of 200,000. I think it might be, it definitely should be in your interest to have sight of the report. It might throw some more light into some of the things. And unfortunately, because now the former acting CEO has left, and whatever might come, well, depending on what might come out of that report, it might be a pointer to maybe further action that might be necessary in particular regard. So I would say, even though in terms of their mandate, they should report to the ambassador of the European Union, I think maybe you need to take effort to interact with them to say, out of all these things, because I would imagine the European Union takes it to court or litigate against you. It reflects some power and motivation. And yet, quite frankly, the kind of projects that you had are probably still necessary. And you probably still need those funds. But in the manner in which the project was handled, it might have cut those funds. And not because the office itself is at fault, but because the general administrative process and the actions of some individuals had created that kind of situation. So I think that is a committee would want to encourage you to interact with the ambassador and really try to clear things and see if things can be done. All right. I want my time to continue. Let's just get in court.
I just ask one last question. Just point out something which is not clear to me, and maybe we see that in the system, about the terms of the public protector. Advocate Mashwana, in his own foreword, says that his term of office comes to an end on the 23rd of October 2009. The Auditor General tells us that Madam Sela started on the 18th of October 2009. Somehow there could have been an overlap of a week where we could have had two public protectors. If that is so, your lifting of the suspension could have been also good. Just some clarity on that would be helpful.
Okay. If I may explain on that, because of the appointment of the public protector, it got to come to the National Assembly, and then from the National Assembly, it then goes to the President.
So there's been some different interpretation as to exactly when is the effective date of the appointment. It's when the National Assembly passed the resolution, or it's when the state president attends his signature. So if you translate that, it is the date when the president signs. So it has been clear.
Was there overlap and no double pay?
No, no overlap, no double pay.
The previous public protector term ended on the 17th, and the new one started on the 18th. Actually, from the
Okay, what then? I've got a question for the deputy public protector and for the accounting officer. To the deputy public protector, I listened with concern when you say the then public protector was doing everything himself and you were left out, nothing that you were doing. Now my question is, did you just earn a salary without doing any work in that office? And what did you do about it? Because I believe you have got the responsibility of reporting such misnomer wherever, especially to the Department of Justice, when things like that were happening. What actually did you do about the matter?
I was talking about
just a minute. How many more questions?
What I referred to was total control. I was talking about control, not actually performing work, but control. Control of the institution in full. In terms of our statute, the public protector has got to delegate powers to the deputy. But we didn't, until I realized that I have to take some action. I did approach Parliament to clarify this issue, and we had a long case for almost a whole year trying to resolve the matter. But in the meantime, there were work that I was doing, but although when I came to Parliament, the work was actually not appropriate for the deputy to do. It was functional work. One of those works that he had delegated was to open polls for the public protector, which I found it very So I did take action in actual fact. Literally, I was waiting. I was improving investigations. I created a lot of guidelines, trying to interpret the act and putting guidelines on the operation. And I was doing I'm still doing was to inspect records and all those things I was doing. Although they were functional, a lot of them, but I came to translate them into my work and enjoy them. And now, fortunately, it was advantageous for the office. Most of my work was research and input, research and recommending to the public profession. So we tend to grow up in that way where we became dependent on my input and asking for them all the time,
all
in spite of the differences.
Okay. Mr. President, I think there's an answer, and I'm happy that you did something. Because even part of responsibility, the control, is your job description. So doing other things except control was wrong. But I'm happy that you did something about it. First of my three questions is about closing up on EU funds. What is the total grant that you got from EU in this financial year? And are there other challenges that you do have as the OPP using this grant? The last grant that was obtained, I think was about 2 years ago, when I came in the EU in January last year, the EU had already stopped the project and was not putting any money into it. At the moment, we have about 2 million sitting on the account. Of CSEP, not us.
How much was the grant?
The grant, I'm told, was about 9 million. That if I remember correctly. But at the moment, the is about 2 million or so that is sitting on the account. I asked about challenges. Maybe you say you are not using the grants used by a certain group, therefore you don't have. No, the grant is not being used by anyone. It's sitting on the
stock.
It's stock, yes. Okay. My second question is on occupational dispensation. According to your report, your legally appointed officers are appointed under the Public Protector Act, not Public Service Act.
Yes.
And there is this norm of restructuring their salaries or improving them. And you say you've got to do this OSD, but you cannot estimate. Now my question is, as you'd be going to the Treasury to require funds and you don't have any estimation, you can't quantify the way that is being used, then what are you asking for?
What you do, Chair, and the OSD, we benchmark against the public sector. The quantification that we do, even the scale of indicators, the benchmark against what is taking place in the public services from up to level 16. So every time we go to Treasury, or in this instance we go to Justice, in respect of OSD, we quantify the value based on the public services guidelines.
My point of asking the question is this a slight difference? Why now copy from public service? You can't quantify your own, you've got to benchmark with public service. Actually, there's no clear difference. There's no clear cut between your X and their X. The last question I'm running, because of time, is on the Mail and Guardian case that has ever been pending. The judgment is pending. So I would like to know what the Public Protector's Office is doing about this case, because it is indicated that the Public Protector is independent and subject only to the Constitution and the law, and they must be impartial and must exercise their power and perform their functions without fear, without favor, without any prejudice. And we are talking about this oil rig scam. So why isn't judgment coming forth, and what are you doing about it? That would be my last question. Thank you, Chair, honorable member. Late last year, judgment in the Mail and Guardian case was delivered by Judge Oswa in the North High Court, and the judgment was against the Office of the Public Protector. The judge ruled that the Office of the Public Protector should, in fact, start the investigation again. It found that there has been some irregularities on the part of the Office of the Public Protector, and that we should even refer to the certain commission that the former president had set up to look at this matter, which did not release the report. So we're in that situation, but before the former Public Protector's term comes to an end, he instructed the lawyers to lodge an appeal. In doing so, we had to go and argue for leave to appeal before the judge. So the leave to appeal came to court at the beginning of this year, and the judge has not actually given a decision whether we take leave or whether he grants leave of appeal or not. The new public protector had a particular interest in this particular case. At some stage, she was not sure whether we should even have appealed in this particular case, but she opted that let her be bound because the leave, the formal vote has already appealed, and that there has already been an argument for the leave to appeal. Let's see what the judge says, if he's granting the leave to appeal or not, and that she'll take the decision there and then whether to go and start the case in over. So that's where we are on the Mail and Guardian case. It's a very interesting explanation. It's easy. I wish you could be written to us. And when the report comes out, can we show it?
The report on the column. Oh, okay. So my understanding is that.
question of paying legal costs or not paying it, it's also still pending. All right. And by appealing, means added.
Added cost.
Added cost.
If it's if the judge, if the high court, if the appeal court finds that.
Right. Did you see public protector? Are we very certain that there is merit in appealing the ruling?
I'm listening, I've got many things I want to ask the public protector about issues they deal with. But I think we may take all day. I've got many issues. I think you might want to ask. But I think you don't focus on the argument to be decided. I mean, I'm asking. Two certain things that is finished, but we are now on an issue that is putting this on.
All right. On page 5, 9, 27.4, made it cut.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not teaching you. You've got to ask for it. Start on the floor. Financial. If we need to do this, if are substantive, then it would mean we need more data. Because then we are going to reflect on all the issues that are here. There were several reports on many issues, which, in my view, are not even traditional issues that are here.
All right. No, I said it. That's why I was reading this slide to say the only cost implication could relate to legal cost. So the issue of the mail and carry is raised in the context of the possible legal cost that might go to the public protector. Just please, in case the public protector loses the case. And that's why my question was, by appealing, it also raises the legal cost in case we lose. And therefore, the question of applying the public protector's mind to any appeal should actually be looking at the possibility of increased legal costs that if they lose the case, they will have to pay. So it was not on the substance of the case itself, but on the aspect that relates to the possible legal costs that the public protector might incur.
The granted check.
Sure.
Can we then discuss maybe institutional issues of the public protector in this country? Because those, in my view, in law, they are relating to how they operate. That's the area where they prevail, you know? I can't let a member of parliament start entering into the affairs of how they operate. The NPA operates, the digital operates, but the finances I can do. But it's not
completely. I think we're in agreement. We're all in agreement. And I'm saying that on the mail and guardian case, our area of interest is on the legal cost that might be incurred. That is financial. Not the merit and the demerit or the substance of the case. That is something else. It is only the possible legal cost because it is financial. So in general, I think we're all in agreement. Right, and on that note, let's move on to Comrade Manat. Comrade Manat?
Hello. There are no issues. Just to ask the head of the audit committee, how many meetings they really have? How many meetings does a committee do you have in that year?
We have 4 to 10 meetings, and then other meetings. We then have usually what we then do to set aside an initial meeting to look specifically at the financial statement. So we would have 5 meetings.
I'm just explain, because in terms of what I see here, only three instances were really helped. The others were encouraged. I'm saying the future to myself and upgrade well reporting, because I mean, from Mr. Mugwena attended only three meetings and some of Mr. Mugwena yourself, fine. And if we allowed it in the two meetings, then those meetings would not have gone on. So you need to be able to report very carefully, because I know that you are totally required to have four meetings. That is, it would mean you have not really had meetings. The issues that I would like to look at relate to how the AG would be able to verify that indeed your statistics are correct when you say we've undertaken investigation of 100 cases and 5 have been completed and so on. How do you verify that? Perhaps to help us is to explain. If I report a case in Northwest, how does the head of come to know that indeed a case today has been lodged with the Office of Public Protector?
I think that has linked to the operational thing that maybe the chairperson of the audit committee cannot answer, but I can. I just want to find out if the honorable wants to know the reported in the office, how does it come to the head office? Okay. In Northwest, we have a regional office situated in Mafikeng. What happens is that the person will walk into the office, say this is the complaint that he makes, it gets recorded, and then later in the day, we get a schedule. There was in fact, all the 9 provincial offices will then send a schedule of the cases they received on that particular day to head office. Some of the offices have regional offices, some of the provincial offices. For instance, maybe in Mafikeng we have an office in Krugersdorp, for instance, and they will also send it to Mafikeng, and Mafikeng will send it to us as well. And then it will go to the public protector and the deputy public protector personnel so that they can have a role of all the cases that we received on the day. They will pinpoint some cases that will not have to go through the run-of-the-mill type of cases. Maybe there will be some specific cases, for instance, that will not need to be investigated in Northwest, and then the public protector and the deputy protector will then assign that to a special attention matter, which is what they call special attention matter. That would be the Executive Members Ethics Act, for instance, that has some time limit, and then they will then assign to a special unit that will deal with those cases. There will be then those ordinary run-of-the-mill type of cases, your ID, your pensions, and everything, which the provincial rep in the province will then allocate to the investigators in the province.
Yeah, I think the concern
of
the
LGBT
relates to that. Not very structured, you know. You must have a specific policy or protocol and even a methodology of recording of this case at all levels in a manner that whenever they come in wanting to audit, they can verify through the office in the province, through the head office, to say, indeed, this case was reported. This case was a routine issue of an ID inquiry, but it was reported and resolved in this manner, so that the manner was verified. So that you must not be the only one saying 100 cases have been investigated, and you say, how do you verify? Then you say, no, but I'm telling you. So that is one serious issue. But now, let's just go through our second issue of policy. This is one issue on page 17, let's just start on page 17. The AG suggests that you don't really have very, very solid policy. That's why I'm going to go through all those issues so that we explain exactly why you don't have those. If you are saying that you need to develop policy formulation review procedure, and say this has been partially achieved, what is this policy formulation review procedure really?
On the issue of procedure, that there were some gaps that the AG identified that we don't have policies. That's a second issue. We created the procedural manual with all the procedures and policies in the OPP, but obviously we could not get all of them in place. For instance, the AG keeps on reminding us that next year there will be a qualification relating to performance information. And they wanted us to start now to work on the procedures and policies relating to the collection of performance information. What we have done on that regard, Chair, was to come up with a procedural manual relating specifically to performance information. Treasury has been kind enough to assist us in this as well, through the template that is now part of the policy relating to the collection of the performance information. That was related to the verification, consultation and even submission of the performance information. We started now at financial aid. We have this template, which is now up and running as well for audit, for the AG to be able to get this information. And also created a mechanism where the deputy public protector go and does a spot check on performance in all the provinces at any time.
Data template, then you say 100 completion of project data. The way you develop your output method targets, I think you need to have a way of making it better. Now it's like if you want to report on houses completed, then you say 100 houses completed. Now you start saying, no, but the 19 house is not 100% complete. It is only 90% complete. So you must not record in that manner. You need to clearly specify your output and your input. The issues that are in the report, most of them relate to output. I mean input, which must be maybe the operational plan of your worker. That I'm going to phone the offices to check if they affect. That doesn't really have to appear in an actual report. Here we would need to know 70 cases investigated, 50 successfully concluded, then we have an idea as to where you are. Now we can leave that our previous example. Now let's look at 19 then. On 8.2.3.5, you say that you could not complete a policy process flow chart. What? This thing takes 2 seconds to complete. That's a chart. let's talk about why in a year you could not do just a chart, unless I misunderstand you. You don't refer to the chart in the ordinary meaning of the word. Or then the chart really, you will check if we develop a policy. This is where it starts. This is how you consult the stakeholder. This is where it is approved and so on. Why do you mean and how could you really a long time to do something which, in my view, if it's what I think to think it is, I could do just by thinking as to who must be involved in terms of who is in this particular policy and so on.
Okay. Chair, it was not just a question of putting up the flowchart, but it was for us to know exactly where it begins. I remember the time we were in the process of creating what we call the Early Resolution Unit. And there was a debate in the office as to if the matter starts at the Early Resolution Unit, how long must it stay there before it goes out to a fully fledged type of investigation. Hence, that was the debate that constrained the completion of the flowchart. And since that time, that we have agreed that because we have created an Early Resolution Unit, that will be the first entry in respect of any matter that comes. Even matters that the OPP has no jurisdiction, they are the one that, even the matter that they can solve.
Can we accept the minutes, whoever is using the report?
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
So that was the only instance on our member that we have, in fact, since now established that any matter that stays in the early routine unit for more than 3 months has to move away from the unit to fully fledged.
You don't have to take a year to do that. You can take 5 minutes with your people to say, for you to know that this case, we have jurisdiction, how many months do you take? No, I'm taking 5 minutes because I'm a law expert, I know this is not investigated, this is a judgment, you can't do this judgment. So please, let us discuss on this. No, let's pass that anyway. Let's look at the second issue now. 8.2.3.5, you're saying that you could not for the entire time develop a skill diversity policy, something like that. You know, that's a policy when you determine that you need forensic investigators, you need auditors, you need maybe document examiners, all these things that you think you may require to be able to execute the task. I mean, really, would it really take you a year to conceptualize that? I mean, those are the issues that they are worried about. We are pointing out now so that really you can just advance them.
Yeah, this one again was intended dependent on something else. It was dependent on the OPP doing a skills audit. We will not be to have proper trust and safety staff, but we saw vast. We exist in almost all provinces and into the region. So a process took a bit a while for us to conduct a skills audit, which also was necessary as well for the purpose of doing the OSD as well. So that was a bit of a delay, but it has been done now and has been achieved and incorporated into the HR manual. Basically, to actually do even your research needs to know exactly what's the high qualification, what's her experience, how long has it been with the organization, what will she need to develop further in the workplace, sort of like individual development plan.
You don't need a year to do that. You don't need a year. You see, I'm just exposing you. You don't need a year. 250 people. I can get them by today if I'm serious. All my workers, fetch me, you tell me your degree, so fetch copies which are certified, then somebody contacts the institution, verified, you know. Very easy. You can't take it to that.
But let's then go to 823.8. You are very unusual. But continue.
No, I think my honorable member, we are always friends. I don't know today.
Please continue.
That's the word. Now, Let's check on the change management policy. There are these think tanks reports. The committee would want to understand exactly what this is, and you would see there are very few reports have really come through the think tank process. Why?
The think tank process, Chair, is more like a peer mechanism of some sort within the OPP, where all the investigators throughout the country will submit their reports to their peers, to their colleagues in the think tank. It meets quarterly. That will then, with those reports, the result of those critical investigations will then be approved by the think tank and be corrected by the think tank. Sometimes other people will pick up that the certain investigator may have missed a certain piece of legislation or a certain piece of evidence. And those are the type of reports that once approved, then the public protector will then release fine if he's happy with it, and then release the public protector report. We really need to have a think tank operational process manual in respect of this, so that investors should know exactly when to send their report to the think tank. We have done that, and now the process is flowing.
Yeah, let's go to there you are saying that you have achieved a security, that is 8.2.5.1, you have achieved a security management strategy, but you know, you could not achieve a profit amount.
Yeah, that's true. The procedure manual, you know, it takes a lot of debate between the office, you know, as to this is where it should be. Perhaps the security was more of a priority in terms of protecting the information and the documents of the public protector. Maybe it had more priority than the procedure manual. That's not just the explanation I
guess. Yes, without, you know, it's Friday, I don't become combative for the Friday. I'm saying you should not take such a long time. You see, the things I'm talking about are functional things which are very easy to do. Please, let's improve on that. Just to check, are the investigators vetted by the NIA?
Yes, yeah.
And all of them are.
Switch on your mic.
We have been focusing more, Chair, on senior managers, but the new public protector has asked that all the staff in her offices be vetted, and the new entrants, and even those that are in the office that may have gone past the safety valve, are being vetted.
Our part 27 relates into the branding. The communications people, I'm sure, ever they are, they are preparing it or they have it ready. So I'm passing it. Let's go to 29 and just look on your outreach strategy. You are saying you could not achieve or implement 100% of the review outreach strategy. Again, this goes to how you formulate your output method and targets. Please go and really look at that so that you will improve. Some of these things are operational things, but they may not necessarily be required for the nature of this report. Here we need specific issues relating to each man was an MEC appointing people in his office without interviews. We investigated the issue with left to separate the issues and see this one are not quite for the force. Once we do that, then when the AG comes in, they are going to say, no, no, no. We can't verify this, we can't get statistics, then you will always fail on performance. We need on performance to deal with the actual output. For us to deal with investigations of abuse by the executive. And those are the things that must be in here. That is a concern. I think the last one I must ask, and the rest you are going to check on your own, would be on page 1. I mean, you see now, we are saying complexion manual, 100% complexion of manual. You see, what a manual, I suppose, is a document. You know, you either have it or don't have it. And if you wrote the first page, to classify it as 10% or 5%, it needs professorial debate, because you may not agree on that now. You just say we need one manual on one. That is maybe what you need. And if you achieve it, you have. If you have not, you have not. I think some of the things we dealt with in the justice and coastal development, one of the member of the community, with those people, so I'm sure we are treating them here in another community. I thought that can really address the case. Just I saw that also 2 million for performance bonus. If you can just set the mind on that, then we can go to consult them.
Thank you. Okay. On performance, that was the performance policy that we have. That dependent on the number of cases finalized. As we'll see, maybe the performance bonus paid this year than the one paid previously has come down a bit because of the it became so hard now. We lifted the bar. It became so hard to get a certain performance because of set a number of cases to be finalized per month per investigation. As well, but we're now relooking with the new strategy that has come in. We're even relooking at this type of performance bonus because we're now insisting more on remedial action in terms of the new thinking of the new public protector rather than on quantity of the cases closed or finalized. So we are relooking at the performance system to see what the emphasis will be in line with the new strategy. That looks at a quick remedial action rather than, not emphasizing more on investigation.
Yes, I noted, I was trying to pay through, but you remember this. You apparently, gave work of about 200,000 rand for experts, for your colleagues. And we're just saying that. You know, the reason why you are employed and pay so much is because we expect that you are the think tank that you are referring to in your document. You must be the ones that sit down and develop policy for the Office of the Public Protector and a salary. Now, if you want an HR expert who is aiming maybe 50,000 rand a month, but that person cannot interview people. What they do, they hire somebody, they're just a conduit, an intermediary. They get somebody to do the work for them and give them 200,000 rand for the work that they are really getting salary. I think we that counter-cyclical stimulus of the economy. Is what the chapter of insurance is currently, because that is the work that you must do yourself. And that's one thing that I thought I could comment on.
We look at it. Thank you.
Like that, you rest your case.
was in and out, so I'm not certain if some of the questions may have been asked, so please correct me if I am sort of duplicating questions. But with regard to performance information, perhaps you can comment. On page 116 of your annual report, the Auditor General is not very happy with the performance information reported on in your annual report, primarily because of the lack of proper source information. And so, perhaps you can indicate to us why you were not able to convince the AG on the accuracy of some of the claims you make in terms of your targets, and whether you achieve those targets or not. And if the Auditor General has insufficient source information on which to verify these targets, how is it your position to verify the target as you've done in your report?
Thank you, Ken. Yes, what we have done, the AG wasn't happy with the correctness of the source information, especially in terms of this to statistics. What we have done, we have what we call the case management system, where we could be able, at the click of a mouse, to know exactly how many cases you have received in the process where they are. But the system was not there as yet, so we now could implement it in the system and check. With the updated software.
Have you checked the AG that it is sufficient to certify them when they come back?
Yes, we sure that once we do that, we didn't want to get him, the AG to check the system at the moment because it has not been fully functional in respect of all the information that we are doing. But what we have done to satisfy the AG is to come up with that flow process chart in terms of the information right from the source up to us, especially one that relates to outreach, the number of the clinics that we have done, and so forth. And to come up with a procedure of manual as well that will be followed in terms of the outreach.
Embellishing and concluding my question. It was very helpful. May I go on? That is a general question. I have one or two specific questions related to your performance indicators. Page 14, very important objective there. On page 14, the very bottom of the page, item 8.1.3.7, important objective, to monitor and report on the remedial action recommended to organs of state. Then finally, in your achieved column, you congratulate yourselves because you've achieved 100% of all complaints where recommendations were made were accepted by organs of state. Now, do you not also monitor implementation, which in my view would be very as much as important as monitoring acceptance, that things at the end of the day are actually done? Now, nowhere in this performance information do I find such a performance indicator, that yes, we recommended X number of actions to be taken by organs of state, and they indeed not only accepted, but implemented X percentage of our recommendations. That isn't here. Do you not think it should be, in the future?
What we can do, we do that, but it may not be here, Chair, but we definitely do that. The good
implementation of the IT document. We have made recommendations to Home Affairs, for instance, as to how they can avoid such a situation as well. And we've created this relationship within a component in the Home Affairs with the Office of the Public Protector, where we meet on a regular basis with them and check the problems that
Okay, maybe go back to your annual report. Too lengthy if you report in detail on every bit of these actions. But at the same time, I think we need to know, is the government listening to you or not? You know, yes, they're accepting your proposals, but somehow there needs to be some sort of methodology without going into too much detail as to whether, yes, Home Affairs are listening to you. To what extent have your recommendations been in fact implemented? It would be very useful for us in this report. That's the first specific question. The second and final specific one relates to somewhere your internal audit. You pat yourselves on the back here on page 20. Again on page 20, a very important objective, quality internal audit reports. And there again in the achievement column you say yes, you're very happy with internal audit. It's 100% implementation, recommendations have been implemented. Now my question is, if we are still receiving a qualified audit report, there's still other matters that the AG is concerned about. Can we not then honestly say that this internal audit function and the audit committee are not picking up these issues? And say, in fact, we are not getting this kind of high level of achievement from the internal audit committee if we are still getting qualified audits and if we are still getting other concerns being established by the auditor general and not the internal audit function.
No, I agree, Chair. I hope the chairman of our audit committee as well can say something on this, but I agree with her.
Yeah, I think you are correct in your observation. But I think what you must also realize is that from the point of view of the audit committee, whatever we do, whatever work we do, you know, we set information by the internal auditor. So if the internal auditor has not picked an issue, chances that we will become aware of it.
I'm finding, Jay, in many of these departments, this juncture, in my view anyway, between the work of the internal audit committee and the findings of the auditor general. In my view, if internal audit units are doing their work effectively, many of the findings that eventually the AG finds would be anticipated and corrective action taken before a poor audit report. That's not only your agencies, others as well, and I think as a committee we may have to make recommendations along these lines about beefing up or capacitating internal audit functions.
If I may add, Chair, from what the honourable member has just said, we have in fact identified the shortcomings on the part of the internal auditor. And then on the study was done, and we thought that it will be, the internal audit will be more efficient and effective if we don't outsource it, but we get it internally. We get a chief executive audit in the office, 8 hours a day, working in there. So we're in the process of making sure that at
now before you.
I have two general questions pertaining to the report. Both of them are performed.
Okay, no, that's fine. Call sure to make a follow-up on.
Okay, thank you very much. I wanted them to talk to page 16 on the AG's report, paragraph 25, and page 14, 8.1.3.6. To me, Chair, I'm seeing a contradiction here.
Can you just repeat the correction? Which paragraph?
Principle of pages is page 16, paragraph 25. 116, I'm sorry.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And then page 14. I'm not sure whether I should say the paragraph or the column 8.1.3.6, with conclusory remark to say achieved. So I wanted to check whether doesn't they see contradiction then, because the very same achieved is what the AG is reporting, that there's no accuracy in terms of documents and other things.
This chair leads to the reporting on finalized matter. In fact, in terms of the Public Protector Act, the Public Protector must report in respect of all his investigation and finalized matters. And in this instance, the Public Protector did report in respect of all the matters that were finalized in this case.
Chair, I thought I understood what they spoke about. I'm still saying, if you read what the AG said about the very same, you know, the column, don't you see contradiction in it? Yourself, not me.
We don't, but obviously the AG will not necessarily agree with everything management says. In this instance,
are you then saying in a way you are contesting this paragraph 25? I mean, I should understand. I should not listen for something I don't understand.
Obviously, sir, we have provided the AG with the information showing that these are the matters that can be.
Yeah, my question is, are you contesting paragraph 25 if you don't see contradiction?
So I'll ask your protection in this instance, because I've said this is what the AG has said and this is what you have said. Obviously, there will never be any, in all matters, any agreement between the AG and management. What the AG has said,
I would request the AG to talk to me, because the honorable gentleman there is not giving me the answer I'm asking.
All right. No, CEO, the question is very substantive. On page 14, you are saying that the objective that is set has been achieved. Now, on page 116, I think the AG says that the information provided to support the reported performance information with regard to investigation and reporting program did not adequately support accuracy and completeness of facts. Which means, in as much as on page 14 you say you have achieved, the Auditor General says he is not able to guarantee accuracy and completeness on the basis of the information that you put on it. So, clearly indicating that the achievement that you are indicating here cannot be independently verified.
Can I ask you?
Please.
Indeed, it is true that the AG found the qualification. The office has been using manuals to coordinate information, and then there is a central point in head office where all this coordination. find that the AG collects, that the first person in some of the first questions that you can see, you find that people send information, and then by the time the information is not reached, we get the statistics that this is the information. So the correcting, in a way of rectifying, we have designed the case management system in the same time to assist us in doing this. And we have changed the manner in which information was coming to the hospital. So let me accept that the truth is true that the work that contributed, and I have verified it myself, the AG was correct. And we took trouble in rectifying this, but one of the challenges was that the information, the record in the reporting in the Office of the Public Protector was manual. Even at this stage, we are still not very successful because we have just installed the case management system, and we are piloting it, and we just hope that by the time when we do this, we will have accurate information. And it means that in addition to the electronic health management system, we still have to go to the manual. At the moment, we back up to use a manual and also electronic health until we are happy that the pilot project is successful.
So, what we have on page 14 is what we showed on what we've done. But when the AG came in as an external control, found that there are gaps that can create doubt. And now you have acted upon it. I think that is what the corporate wanted to understand. Because if you see a contradiction between page 14 and page 116, then that will cause you to act and correct. But if you see no contradiction, then you leave it as it is. And when the Auditor General comes again, it will be the same finding. But we cannot guarantee the correctness and accuracy of the facts given. Tim?
Thank you, Chair. My first question relates to page 4, the statistical overview. And I'm looking, Chair, at potentially the throughput performance of the Office of the Public Protector. The totals are given in the table on page 4. 6,780 complaints brought forward, 12,000 odd received, 13,000 odd finalized, and so carried forward to 09/10, just under 6,000. Those totals, Chair, indicate to me that the office is slowly but surely getting on top of the situation. They are carrying forward slightly fewer cases than they brought into the year. And that to me is encouraging. However, Chair, there are four provinces, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, where the number of cases carried forward exceeds those that were there at the beginning of the year. Now, Chair, that suggests to me that there's a problem in terms of leadership capacity, resources in the office in those four provinces. Is the management aware of the problem in those four provinces, and what are they doing to address that situation? That's my first question, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Yes, we are aware of the information, Honourable Member, and in fact, we took extraordinary measures. For instance, I'll start with Limpopo. In Limpopo, we lost the provincial rep to the Human Rights Commission, and then the new rep was appointed, but we discovered that there was this backlog. So we removed people, and we call it sort of a special project. We moved people from head office, especially when Kia did that with the deadlock. And we discovered that one of the reasons that Limpopo is a vast province.
This information, I'm sure, is valuable to the portfolio committee. I think for our purposes, I just needed to be assured that the office is aware of the problem and that there are extraordinary measures which they are adopting. I'm quite comfortable with that assurance. I don't know if the rest of the committee are, but that's it. Thank you. My second question relates to page 63. And I'm looking here at the chapter relating to systemic and own initiative investigations. Now, Chair, I'm aware that for lawyers, the idea of frivolous and vexatious prosecution is a really, really bad thing. This is for our accountant friends, the idea of fruitless and wasteful expenditure is a really, really bad thing. But these relate to investigations which the Office of the Public Protector has conducted on its own initiative. I want to know, please, Chair, whether there is a written policy within the Office which guides their choice of their own initiative investigation. How do they prioritize what they think is important in terms of initiating an investigation? Does it have to meet certain criteria? How do you evaluate whether something that you read in a newspaper is worth investigating or not? So I'd just like to be assured that there is some kind of definitive, preferably written guideline in place that guides the choice of operation. And I'd like to hear words like, you know, constitution, need of citizens, whatever, in that answer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honour Member. We have in the Office of Public Protector a practice of how to conduct own initiative investigation. The practice has been that if an investigator in Cape Town picks up in a fund newspaper certain thing that may relate to a syringe that has been found in a township, And probably the government hospital is responsible, and he wants to do his own initiative, he will do what we call an investigative plan, including a project plan with a budget in it. He will send it to the Deputy Public Protector, and it is then the Deputy Protector will then look through in terms of the mandate. Do we have a mandate to do this particular case? How is the budget? Is the budget provided? How long will it take in the project plan? And what the remedial action gonna be. It is then the deputy public protector then will approve such own initiative investigation. That is a practice check in the office. Maybe you can elaborate how this is actually taken into account in determining.
It's fine.
Thank
you.
Chair,
may
I refer to page 140, my question relates to expenses related to motor vehicles. 140. You see on top there is motor vehicles in the town. May I just preface my question by referring to a very well-known incident in this parliament many years back when the debate on transport, members were complaining bitterly about the quality of the food on the SAA. Minister then replied, "Will you investigate or will you
investigate?"
Yeah. I want to respond by saying, "Will you investigate or will you laundry?"
Yeah.
If you look at the cost relating to motor vehicles, it's gone up from 887 million to 2.34 million, according to my calculation, 263% increase. It costs you 195,000 per month cost for motor vehicles. Those cars are leased to go to page 145. At the bottom, you will see that you are leasing vehicles in terms of the service level agreement between the Department of Transport and Continental World. Although on page 140 it says Famous World, so I presume it's the same company. The problem with the technical problem here. Now, my question is, in addition, your senior staff
part of the salary package, they all get traveling allowance. And if I count the seven names mentioned here, for this period they earn more than half a million in addition as traveling allowance. Why was it necessary to up the amount so dramatically? And who qualifies for official cars, for official transport, to justify an increase from 887 to 2.34 in 1 year?
The one relates to the only person who qualifies for the public protector. I think the demand that is escalated relates to the value of the public protector. Then the others, those within the SBM, senior management cadre, will definitely get restructured as far in line with what is allowed in the public service. But then regarding the escalation of FCPF also assisting in terms of the public hours, because that's one that is managed by National Treasury, and they will simply utilize the best.
Just keep telling you, FCPF world and private world the same thing. This amount of 2.341, 3 noughts might be added to it, so it's actually 2 million. Are you saying that the public protector gets, which car costs 2.3 million a year?
I think Mr. Ford assist me, but I think it's related to the package when you are leaving.
Thank you. In that amount, it's not only the public protector car, it's also the cars which the staff members are using. For instance, like in head office, we've got two. And in the regional offices, we've got cars. We have two pool cars at head office. That is the cost of the pool cars. And also, staff members, if they conduct investigations, those who do not qualify or those who did not structure for car allowance, most of the investigators, not most, all investigators, don't qualify for car allowance, they did not structure for car allowance. They hire Patisa Wells car, Paris Wells, it's part of that. So it's all inclusive amount, not necessarily only the higher public protector.
So that 2.3 million per annum is like, it's like a piece of something like an Avis or a Hertz, where they can simply walk in and hire a car. And that's the amount that accumulates throughout the year. This is what you budgeted for.
No, so those cars are in our offices. Remember, we have 18, okay, in fact, let's say 9 cars in respect of all the provinces, but two cars in head office at the public protector cars. We almost have about 13 cars. And we also have some cars, I'm not sure the number, but we also have cars in some of the regional offices. I know, like far away places like Upington, Kuruman as well. So it's an accumulative of, if you can give me the exact state of the car that we have. And also, last year there's been an increase in our outreach activities in terms of going out and reaching out to the people, going out on loud hailing and then on functioning, hence the increase. Okay.
Another question?
The
last question, yeah.
Thank you. The various investigations mentioned, as my colleague mentioned here, in the report, from all sorts of avenues. Now, my question is, what sort of mechanisms do the public protector use to follow up on the recommendations? The most recent one was one on Parliament. Parliament must, before a specific date, act. The time frames were mentioned of 30 June and 1 July, where Parliament does, for example, change the Members' Ethics Act. Is there communication between the public protector and Parliament to ensure that those things are done? And what is the, and one of the recommendations also was that sanctions must be brought into the Act, sanctions similar to which are applicable to parliamentary members themselves. So my question is, what does the public protector do if Parliament does nothing about it? Is communication between the two stuff?
Okay, what we do in respect of the run of the media investigation, for instance, we had one case where it relates to the provisions of the ARV, which was stopped, and we had to make sure that it's done. In more often than not, it has been complied with. We have never come with a situation where it has not been done. For instance, in the particular case that the member is referring to, as well in respect of the member's interest, we put the time frame and we refer correspondence not only to Parliament, but also to the Office of the President, as well, with a clear time frame, and we are deriving the matter for that particular instance to check if it's not done. We have been looking for mechanisms that we can implement in respect if it's not being done. The public protector has indicated that, of course, we'll expect in some instances if an individual is affected and has made a recommendation and that recommendation is not being implemented, that we'll definitely take to court to have the recommendation taken into account, and that as a policy we'll be joining in as amicus curiae for the court to ensure that the remedy is in fact implemented.
Okay.
And then just on this one. This year I had a sort of a pilot project. In all cases, I had to do things myself around provinces to try to reduce the backlog. In all those cases, the mechanisms that we used was to sign agreement to the organ of the institutions that it is working, because all the cases that we have finalized by ADR or negotiation for mediation, we have agreements that we have signed. We have a monitoring schedule that we have created where we put the terms of that agreement with timeline. Then we monitor in one or two cases we could keep waiting, but when we put timelines after 7 days, we said we will explain the body, then we will check on you whether it is done. And then we will then go and check. And then they will say that we had a there was informal in time, because it's really a reminder to say, remember that on this day we said we would explain the body in terms of our agreement. They would then provide us with information around what time we would take it. And then we are able to enter into another agreement. Then what are you going to do about it? So in all those matters I have records, we are following them up. Some of the issues that we have identified, we have put on, decided that they are systemic. When we discover that there are systemic problems, we record on the systemic schedule, meaning that we will then perform another investigation to find out what were the root causes of all this, whereas in the meantime, we dealt with the symptoms and things we assess. The agreements are also enforceable in court if it comes to that point. Thank you. Gracias.